difficulties facing meditators and how to work with them. In a way, it can be seen as a positive thing that there's no such thing as a perfect meditator, as all the problems and difficulties that one comes across in meditation practice can be a potential advantage as they are workable. As in life, what we see as difficulties in meditation can be the cause of growth in the Dhamma. This is especially true of Vipassana meditation, where a lot of difficulties, both physical and mental, can be encountered. It is not until the enlightenment factor of equanimity develops sufficiently that finally there will cease to be difficulties in the practice. That is why it is critical for the meditator to be monitoring feelings and emotions in his or her practice, as it is the ability to accept whatever feelings and subsequent emotions arise with little or no reaction that eventually helps the practice to stabilize and mature as one develops more equanimity. There is a set of common difficulties facing nearly all meditators that needs to be highlighted. They're called the Nibbāranas in Pali, which translates as the five hindrances, or the obstacles that create difficulties for the meditator doing practice. Sensuality / lusts, preoccupation with the sensory world and hankering after sense objects. Then all forms of ill will, from irritation, resentment to outright hostility. Mental inertia, lack of mental and or physical energy. Restlessness and worry, which is agitation of the mind and body as well as negatively tracing back to the past or remorse. Skeptical doubt, which is the mind's wavering or persistent uncertainty about one's own ability, the quality of the teacher or the given technique. Having mentioned the negatives, we should look then at possible solutions. An antidote for sensuality lust depends on the ability to access the urges in the mind. First, be clear that it is desire in oneself that is the cause of the suffering. Then to know that during insight meditation, it is possible to decondition the urges in the mind, which will lessen or be inhibited, and thus ultimately one can be free from the hankerings in the mind. Loving kindness meditation will change the quality of the mind from negative to positive, thereby helping to overcome aversion and all forms of ill will. Arousing one's energy and effort can help overcome mental inertia. As for restlessness and worry, calming and stabilizing the mind with a concentration-based meditation is helpful. Again, loving kindness is useful here. Skeptical doubt is more difficult to overcome until one develops sufficient confidence in the Buddha Dharma to overcome the waverings in the mind. So reflections on the qualities of the Buddha can inspire one and arouse the necessary confidence. On the other hand, if you have no Buddhist leanings, by making a determination to commit to the practice as it unfolds, you're more likely to experience positive feedback, so that confidence will then arise, thus overcoming the mind's tendency to waver. Certainly, concentration meditations can be relied upon to give some relief from the five hindrances by temporarily suppressing them. However, threshold concentration arises in Vipassana meditation, it too will inhibit the hindrances to some extent as well. But ultimately, the mind is purified and completely cleared of the five hindrances through the cleansing power of Vipassana meditation itself. Now, here are some difficulties in handling the practice. Getting the balance right. One needs to balance the three meditation skills in the Eightfold Practice Path, which are effort / application, mindfulness, and concentration. Too much effort, that is not on target or misdirected effort, makes the mind restless. If there is too much of the fixed type of concentration in Vipassana meditation, one loses mindfulness. The flow is blocked. That is, moment awareness is restricted. On the other hand, one can't have too much mindfulness, so one needs to be able to read and adjust one's own practice and balance these three meditation skills. Then there's mind wanderings. Preoccupation with the content of the mind, being lost in thought or obsessive trains of thought requires skillful handling. It is not the object of the Vipassana practice to repress the thinking. Rather, one has to allow that over the period of a retreat, the mind, to some extent, will naturally settle. There are two ways to work with the thinking. Vigorously, mentally noting the thinking as thinking, to cut it, as this helps to break the circuit, or, when possible, allow the trains of thought to run and find the gaps or pauses between thoughts. If one's mindfulness is sharp enough, then try to catch the beginning of the next thought as it is about to form. In this way, the circuitous thinking pattern is broken and the mind will then quieten. Thus, one is not so much caught up in the content of the mind, and with the help of the mental noting, one relates to the thought more dispassionately. And there's difficulty with sleepiness, and this is a common problem when people come to meditation retreats. Usually, it is just mental and physical exhaustion for most people. So we are overextended, stretched and stressed. The people are often just simply exhausted. In today's society, we do not give ourselves enough rest. We are trying to function on less sleep while achieving more and more, so we end up with a sleep debt at the cost of our well-being. A meditation retreat gives us time out to recuperate and recharge ourselves. It used to take just a few days into retreat for people to fully recover. Now, it can take a week or so, which indicates that the pace of everyday life is accelerating rapidly. On the other hand, if the sleepiness persists, it is possible that by focusing on the sleepy state, as one mentally notes it, the sleepiness will disperse once the worst of the sleep debt is resolved with rest. Inability or disinclination to handle pain. The reference here is to posture pain, not a pre-existing medical condition. Pain is inevitable in meditation, as in life. Only suffering is optional. The meditator should not try to make it go away, but regard it as a friend, for then its true nature will be seen. One should work with posture pain by softening into the pain sensations and relaxing into any muscular contractions. Then one finds the center of the so-called pain by noting specific characteristics in it, such as tension, heat, throbbing, stabbing, etc. When the mind is quiet and without resistance, and with just the knowing of the specific characteristics of the pain, coupled with a consciousness of it, that is, the knowing of the pain sensations, then the pain will change or move in some way. It is not that it is resolved, as it will probably come back, but one has achieved some insight into its true nature. Fears and feelings of anxiety, that is, unpleasant feelings of apprehension or distress caused by the anticipation of imagined danger. It is the feeling of looking forward in dread to something that one supposes is going to happen that brings up the fear. The antidote for fear is to stay in the present moment. There is also the fear of the unknown. As a result, some people stop meditating altogether. Deep within most of our minds lies unwholesome latent tendencies, the dark side or the shadow. Powerful material can surface during Vipassana meditation, and most meditators can handle this adequately without breaking down. Only people deeply troubled with a neurosis or a clinical condition such as psychosis, should not do intensive Vipassana meditation without guidance. Wrong attitude, which is ambitious to achieve results or wanting immediate effects, which is an acquisitive attitude. The right attitude is an open accepting of things as they are without any expectation. Above all, patience and forbearance is needed in relating to the meditation experience. The Buddha described it well in the Dhammapada. Quote, patience and forbearance is the power of those who meditate. Now, handling the meditation object wrongly. Unusual experiences and sensations can arise in the meditation, such as visions, images, voices, and light. If you cling to them, whether they are blissful or fearful, you may become attached to the phenomena. It is critical that you remain neutral towards them by labeling them as seeing-seeing, hearing-hearing, never giving any unusual experience, positive or negative, any significance. Report them to a qualified teacher or mentor who can assist you with an appropriate strategy or technique to handle them. Now look at resistance. An indicator of resistance, which you might not be aware of, is contraction in the body, or it could be in the mind, with wanting pain and or busyness in the mind to go away, rather than just allowing them to be. There is a need for just acceptance, rather than trying to change things. It is about acceptance, non-interference, just noticing. Not noticing the knowing. To be an impartial observer, that is, as a witness, one needs to be aware of the object and the knowing of it, that is, the consciousness of something. This is known as pairing, the mind knowing the mind, which is important to grasp in order to make conscious what is unconscious. Understanding these problems will help you manage your practice and give you the ability to make the appropriate adjustment based on knowledge on the various methods and techniques, and ultimately the ability to self-manage your meditation practice. The path of meditation is a path of practice. Practice is repetition, methodical exercises to develop skills. It follows then that one needs to understand what you are doing and to have the trust and commitment to just do the basic techniques, thus letting the practice unfold of itself. Rather than having expectation in the mind with wanting immediate results and outcomes when you have not done enough practice at the early stage of the practice to allow it to naturally unfold. Development and fluency in the practice comes from steady and sustained application in spite of difficulties that may be encountered. When all is said and done, the best way to work with difficulties in Vipassana meditation is to seek a teacher or mentor. But this is not a guru who claims to do the work for you, but a worthy teacher or mentor who has had travel experience and can guide and advise you on the practice path. There was an exchange between the Buddha and his attendant Ananda, where Ananda said that after a lifetime of study, he knew all the teachings and therefore he could practice now by himself. The Buddha responded to the effect that without a qualified teacher, the Dharma could not be realized. In the final analysis is not a matter of this or that technique, but the need to work with a guide who has travel experience, that is, a mentor in the Dhamma.